It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. 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 It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. This is the Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, the Tarncast.
Hello, welcome to the Tarncast podcast. Welcome. I'm your host, Janet Varney. Welcome to the Hunger Games.
You're better than anybody who did whatever that was in the Hunger Games.
Oh, I feel like, thank you.
I feel like you're over the top wealthy characters.
It's tough with stuff like that because it's not like, it's hard when, you know what, and I would actually, this is a really weird dovetail, these two things that I want to talk about side by side with you, but mm-hmm. I am very interested to hear what your perspective will be. That is a very difficult balance to strike because, of course, the movies, like mm-hmm. the books. I mean, the books, I don't feel like there's any. I did read the first book.
You read
granted,
the first
I didn't
one.
Read the rest, yeah. I did read the first book. Someone was like, you must read the first book before you can see the movies.
Did they sound like a wealthy person in the Hunger Games?
They did, with crazy makeup. And so what I remember is that the characters, the really cartoonish characters that you see in the movies, I don't remember feeling like that was humorous. Like, mm-hmm. I don't remember being like, we're in on the joke here. I don't remember that. I remember it being very sort of like, the whole book was like very teenage angsty. And it was good. It was fun, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't remember feeling there was, I don't remember any comic relief per se. It doesn't mean that like some of the characters aren't a little bit kooky, but I just don't remember the conflict. So in the movie, it feels like that's, it's so over the top. Those characters that it's meant to be funny.
I think it's just weird
tonally, and I think that would be really challenging as an actor to kind of go, wait, what are we doing here? Because I don't want it to seem like I'm making fun of this world.
Yeah.
But I'm also being put in this preposterous makeup and costume, and I'm doing this crazy voice. I would use Sweet Elizabeth Banks as an example. I just feel it's hard because it feels like she's in a different movie than Jennifer Lawrence.
I agree. I mean, I think that's like a weird tonal problem with the movie is that the rich people all feel like they're in like a satire, like a sci-fi satire movie.
Right.
But the resistance, mostly the young actors, but then in the later movies you have Philip Seymour Hoffman and Julianne Moore who are not, they're playing it like the resistance. They're low key. But everybody who's rich is like crazy and silly. And you're right. It does seem like two different movies.
Yeah.
One seems more grounded in some kind of reality and the other one's just like a ludicrous satire.
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know how I would have done a better job, and maybe other people don't feel that way, but it is something that I was like kind of struggling with. And so this is the weird thing.
But if you're directed to do that, I mean, what are you going to do?
Oh, absolutely.
You
absolutely.
Have to.
Absolutely. I mean, there's... Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure I would have done the exact same thing. Now, having said that, this is what I'm going to compare it with, which is a much toned down version of those two vibes, right?
Uh-huh.
But did you watch People vs. O.J. Simpson?
No.
Okay.
No, and everybody,
to me,
everybody's telling
me they
you to watch
struck that balance. To me, what was over the top and campy
mm-hmm.
somehow for me still worked perfectly.
That's
with
what
was like angsty and honest and tragic and real.
All my friends named Steve, which is a lot of friends, they all say
one.
The same thing.
Yeah.
You know two, at least. You know Steve Falk, of
I
course,
do.
And you know Steve Skelton.
I do.
Of the film Pigs, but you probably don't
do.
Know Steve Hicks. Or I have a friend named Rob whose real first name is Steve.
Okay.
He goes by his middle name because everybody's named Steve.
But do you call him Steve?
No, I call him Rob.
But in your mind, you think of him as your friend Steve.
He's my friend Steve.
Yeah.
They're all my friends Steve.
Well, I think you should watch because I want to talk to you about it and hear what you think. Because that is definitely the impression that I got. And that's what I just reminded me of when we were talking about all this with Hunger Games. I didn't mean to think about that. But all of a sudden, I thought, you know what? That's an example of a place where I really felt like it was great.
Well, I'll check it out. I mean, I was resistant to it for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
And I'll be perfectly honest. One, I don't want to go through the O.J. Simpson trial again.
Yeah.
Having, like, been there, not literally been in the room, but, you know,
Were you following it at the time?
Well, it was impossible not to.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, unless you shut everything off.
I just have a bad memory because I remember touch points, but I don't remember most of it.
Yeah.
Like, I remember people making a big deal about Marsha Clark's hair. I remember, obviously, you know,
I know
the use of the N-word.
I guess that, of, yeah.
You know, I mean, but I just don't remember. I guess I didn't really pay attention or, yeah, I don't know.
I did, and, I mean, as much as it was shoved down my throat, I processed it.
Yeah.
And one of the things, and I know you like true crime stuff, and I don't.
Yeah.
Like, I will watch the goriest ass horror movie.
Yeah.
If it's fiction,
yeah.
I'm fine with it. It's like, I always make this comparison. I will watch the shit out of the Poseidon Adventure
mm-hmm.
over and over and over
because
Gene Hackman is a priest and he's mad and he's going to save everybody and it's awesome and people drown and it's a horrible way. It's like a horror movie, really.
Yeah.
But I will not watch Titanic.
Yeah.
And
I shouldn't watch Titanic. I mean, that's,
I mean, there's other reasons not to watch Titanic in my estimation.
Right,
but the main the main thing for me is
that it's a story. But that's what's funny is that it's like, that all is weird for me too, because I have a tremendously hard time with any war movie. I mean, for the longest time, I wouldn't see anything. I couldn't get through Good Morning Vietnam. I couldn't get through any war movie.
Yeah. My wife still won't watch war movies. I'm on my own.
Because I just fall apart. And it is for exactly that reason. It's like, this is not fiction. I don't care if this character is fictitious. All I have to do is think about replacing that with a real person. And I'm just shattered. And so Titanic is long ago enough, I guess, and the way that it was depicted was so over the top that what happens is that I get sucked into it, not because it's a good movie, because it's not in the way that I prefer a movie to be good.
Right.
Except for James Cameron gets me every time. Like, it doesn't matter if it's his best version of himself or his worst, I'll still get sucked in for a little
while. Did you like Avatar?
I was about to give that disclaimer.
That caveat.
I couldn't. I mean, I just don't remember it. I was bored, I guess, is where I'm going with that. But so that one kind of sucks me in. And then when tragedy strikes, that is when I remember, oh, shit, I shouldn't be doing this because now
it's
I'm
awful.
Losing my mind over how sad this is. So it's really weird because there's something about, like, the fictionalized version, even of untrue events, that can really upset me, but the there's some kind of like bleak darkness to true crime that I'm fascinated by. That like the detective part of my brain, or like the obsessive compulsive person who wants to put things in order, like we all, like many of us have.
Sure.
Will like clamp down on that stuff in a way that somehow, like, there's like a part of my brain that's like working, like gears that are turning in that don't turn when it's fiction, and then that's all emotion, and I'm just like a mess.
I don't really get it.
I'm trying to explain it, but I don't really get it either, because I can't believe it.
Well, I mean, it's like I think you can be fascinated by the dark side of humanity, which is also really being fascinated with the dark side of yourself, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the more real it feels, I guess, the more jarring it is, as opposed to if you let yourself off the hook with this.
But I was just talking with Allison Bennett about this because she also loves true crime. When I just podcast her, and I said I do feel like it's something that women respond to.
Oh yeah, you guys made. She made a very interesting point about
that. She said, like, I think that you kind of, there's some kind of weird protective thing that you're doing for yourself that is kind of conditioning yourself. Like, yeah, it's happening.
That was the point she made too, is that, like, these are stories that are about women.
Yeah.
Which you don't get as much of in pop culture.
Yeah.
Which is true. The Hunger Games notwithstanding.
Yeah.
Which we're talking about. The thing about the Hunger Games, Titanic is a good example, actually, because it is like my kind of movie. Like I like disaster movies.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the shit out of 2012.
Yeah.
It's the dumbest movie ever, but I had a good time.
Yeah, I guess 2012. That one I don't know if I like, but The Day After Tomorrow.
Yeah, The Day After Tomorrow is fun. Well, The Day After Tomorrow, they put too much weight on the front of it.
Because
it's like all these awesome disasters, and then it's just Dennis Quaid walking through snow.
Right.
So that's like, that was the wrong way. Yeah. Somehow.
Did you see The Wave? You must have.
The
Wave? Isn't that what it's called?
The Wave? You mean the Peter, the Peter Weir movie?
No, the one that.
Oh, The Fifth Wave.
This is one that just came out that's like Danish or French.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
Oh, you gotta see it.
I hear it's pretty great.
It's really good. Because it's so small scale, it feels... Now I'm embarrassed that I can't remember what country it is, but it's... Oh, yeah, it's Norwegian.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's up in the mountains. I think in Norway. And but it's really cool to see because it's really, really well done. And it's not, like, atypical in the sense that, you know, of course it's, like, this one guy realized something happening, this thing,
yeah,
you know, no one believes
film,
in, and this,
it's,
all
yeah.
that. But it's so, it's a small community. So it's kind of cool because you get to see what happens to, like, you're only following, like, four characters instead of, like, The Day After Tomorrow, you're following 20 characters.
Well, that's what, I mean, I know everybody who talks about that Spielberg remake of War of the Worlds hates the Tim Robbins third act stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't hate it as much as everybody, but I just liked the idea of that kind of alien invasion, like an Independence Day level invasion that's all from the perspective of one family.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah.
And I don't know, there's something, it doesn't let you off the hook as much as those ones that like weave all the stories
it's
together.
Like back to the pilot.
Right,
blah,
right.
Blah, blah, blah.
Which, and this is funny too because we were watching yesterday. We saw that the Batman versus Superman program. You know, because I have a 10-year-old son who loves superheroes.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not going to complain about that movie because I knew what I was getting into.
Right.
I saw the ratings on Rotten Tomatoes.
Right.
I understand who the cast is.
Right.
And because I had such low expectations, it didn't piss me. And I don't really care about comic book. I know people like care about. You're ruining the fabric of the comic book narrative.
Right.
And I'm like, no, I don't care. I went to go see a movie where shit blows up.
Right.
And I essentially got that.
Yeah.
And is it imperfect? Yeah. Is it too long? Yeah. But I didn't hate it.
Right.
You know. And Colby was amused enough and he came out. He's like, that wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
But it, like Day After Tomorrow, it was weighted wrong. Like there was too much talking for the first half of the movie.
Yeah.
It was there's too many funerals and everybody's bummed out and Superman doesn't know if he wants to be good anymore and Batman's just angry and it just got, that went on too long. And then once the action happens, there's like some actually really fun, well realized, you know, visuals and some not so much.
Yeah.
You know, I think with Snyder, it's when he does hand to hand stuff, it's unwatchable.
Yeah.
But when it's like a big, like city getting wrecked.
Sorry about
you gotta
that.
Get.
No one has my home phone number. No one.
Oh yeah.
So I'm not really sure how this is even happening.
Happens to me when I record these things at home all the time.
I don't know if you edit it, but like I'm in shock that
I never edit these things. what is it?
Ew.
Oh, it's like a.
How rude.
Yeah. Right. That's all landlines are for, is junk calls.
Yeah. Like, listen, I'm going to turn this volume down. I can't believe it. Even that is just, I'm still shocked. Just shocked that happened when it did. Okay, I really want this to be turning off. Ringers.
All right, what was I saying? I was saying, oh yeah, so the action's pretty relentless in the last half of Superman, and I can understand people getting bored. And then we went home and we rewatched the Force Awakens Star Wars show, which I hadn't seen since it was in the theater.
Yeah.
And I felt the same way about The Force Awakens that the Doobie Brothers feel about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Just all right.
Yeah.
But when I watched it again, I was like, oh, I like it more the second time.
Because
I kind of knew what I was getting into. And what I like about it is it captures the original, the very first one.
Yes.
Pacing.
Yes, agreed.
I mean, I think it's just a mashup of the first three movies all just again, which
is,
you know, has it raises questions.
Right, right.
Where are all these stormtroopers coming right. from? And all the, you know, like, how, like, wow, what yeah. rose from the ashes? Yeah. This is a big operation. This is a giant operation. Yeah. And why are they building another debt? Like, all those, like, jokes.
Right.
That you can make that are good points actually yeah. about storytelling, but the pacing I really like because it's, you know, you get your action sequence and it has jokes in it.
Yep, that's yep, so important.
And that's what those prequels were missing, and I think yeah. a lot of just action movies in general are yeah. missing. Well, it's just yeah. a good sense of humor about the sort of ridiculousness of.
Well, that's why something like Guardians of the Galaxy and yeah. Joss's treatment of pretty much anything is very valuable.
And Ant-Man was good. Like, yeah. yeah.
Did you like Deadpool?
I loved Deadpool. Yeah. I thought it was really fun.
Yeah, that was really good too. Yeah. It's nice.
It but that was
nice.
Also 90 minutes long. Or right. like 95 minutes long. Yeah. Which is exactly how long every superhero movie yeah. should be.
Yeah.
So it gets... If, even if it had fallen apart in the second half, I still would have been like that movie.
Yeah.
Like everybody hated that Fantastic Four reboot that came right. out because it's not a good movie. But... Clocks in an hour 40 minutes.
Yeah.
So I liked it more than a lot of the other superhero movies that I saw yeah. that year. Because yeah. it was like, I was done. You know, yeah. the action was done. They get boring.
Yeah, it's true.
Because it's the same thing over and over again. But I like the pacing of... there's an action sequence. And then there's like a little character development mm-hmm. sequence where we're... And it feels... Like everybody, you're hiding from mm-hmm. the war that's happening around
yes,
you,
yes,
and
yes,
then it
yes.
comes to you, and you have to get back
yes,
into it.
Yeah,
and I just like that kind of up and down roller coaster.
More. It gives you the opportunity to, again, talking about sort of different parts of your brain, but it kind of is that it's sort of, you know, negative space and then a bunch of stuff, and then that's just as important. And not to dwell on the Batman versus Superman thing, because I haven't seen it, but that's what someone who saw it said, who also felt the same way as you, which was like, I had had plenty of exposure to why I was going to hate it, and I knew I made the determination that I'm still going to see it in the theater and make my own opinion, and all of those things were true, but also the things that were positive were still positive, but he said I did feel like the pacing was like, you can't just have everything of this and this and then have it be relentless for the rest of the movie and think that you figured something out. Like, oh, look, we're right. just going to be, like, in your face the entire rest of the time with action and not give any chance to sort of step back and, like, have that retreat.
Right.
And then, like you said, I mean, I think the way you described the Star Wars movies is perfect.
I think it's a corporate sort of outcropping of Robert McKee's story.
Mm.
Like, where he is, you know, all about these story beats and, you know, it's about character development. You know, and I think that with these action movies, especially the way they're written now, is there's all this character development up front, which is supposed to make you care more
right.
about the characters when they're in the action.
Right.
But that's not actually, I don't think that's good writing.
Yeah.
I think, especially if you're doing an action movie,
yeah.
the character development happens as the action happens.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happens in The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Those characters get developed through...
Yeah.
I mean, they're having conversations when shit is blowing up around
yes,
them and
yeah.
you're finding their sense of humor and you're finding where they're terrified and where they're not and
yeah.
where they're coming from.
You get
from.
To know them in times of stress, so you get to see, like, you know, a certain authenticity there with the character. Well, here's what that made me think of, which is I watched it again recently, having it, like, when I was in high school, it was, like, a movie I watched over and over and over again,
mm-hmm.
which was Aliens.
Oh, yeah.
Just to get back
yeah.
to James
yeah.
Cameron. But the reason I thought of that is that the last time I watched it a couple months ago, I went through the whole series again. Just like, you got to do it every once in a while.
Sure.
I still love the fourth one a lot.
Alien Resurrection
Alien Resurrection.
Is gorgeous.
It's so good. I mean, it's gorgeous. Like,
I mean,
visually.
Gorgeous.
Stunning.
It's dumb. The story
yeah.
is dumb,
but it's so
and the characters
good.
Are kind of
so,
dumb. But
it's so it is it knows exactly what it is. Speaking of things
that's
like,
true.
It fully knows what it is.
Yeah.
And so it takes itself just the right amount of seriously for how ludicrous it is. But Aliens to me, because I made this comment as I was watching it, was like, right, this is an example of how to execute in like the most sort of expedient, like there's a word I'm looking for that's like the most basic words, and I'm really mad that I can't think of right now, but it's just like it's a sort of conservative, smart, like, chunk of stuff that happens with characters where you get such a sense of them so quickly, and it's just, and more importantly, not just you get a sense of them, but somehow he really makes you feel like those people, those miners or whatever, what are they?
Well, I'm in forgetting. The aliens?
In the aliens.
Well, there are, you mean the soldiers?
Yeah.
They're Marines.
But for some reason I felt like they were like, oh no.
Well, they're going to save a mining
colony.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay, that's why.
I was about to ask you.
They have all their like equipment and stuff. But what I was thinking of, yeah, the Marines, sorry. The problem is that I started thinking about the same thing being true of the Abyss. But he has this way of establishing relationships between people with such a tiny amount of just judiciously placed dialogue and, like, it looks between people that it, like, blows my mind. Because when you think about aliens, like, I mean, obviously a lot of stuff happens in a very particular order. And, in fact, in many ways, the shit hits the fan. There's definitely plenty of breaths in the second half. But obviously you do have a ton of, you know, stuff at the beginning that sort of gets you familiar with what's going to be happening and who everyone is and what the fuck's going on. But I feel like within 5 minutes of spending time with those Marines, you feel like they have had 5 movies before this one. You're like, oh, I get it.
Yeah, you're right.
This person. Like, I just think it's so, and there's no like fat on it. It's like just meat. It's just like,
yeah, I was
this
gonna...
and that, and this is playful and that, and these two don't like each other and this, and she's a fucking machine and da 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 da. And like, I just feel like,
if you're an alien
nerd, I care so quickly about them.
Yeah, if you're an alien nerd though, you probably have the box set maybe with the extended version of Aliens.
No,
have you
I've
never seen that?
It.
It's actually worth watching just to know how important it was that all that shit got cut out.
But oh, that there was more?
There's all this stuff with the, speaking of miners,
yeah.
That's why I thought maybe you were making the mistake, is that there's like a whole shit with the miners.
I heard about this.
You see Newt's family before
this.
The aliens get there, blah, blah, blah. That's before you even get to Sigourney Weaver.
I had no idea.
And Paul Reiser and all that.
Yeah.
But like, that's jettisoning that stuff was like such a good idea.
Well, but also those people all die and then they're gone. And like you said, that's not what the movie's about. The movie's about giving a shit about the Marines.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
You know?
That movie, when I saw it in the theater, it's actually goes against my example of action pacing because it is pretty relentless at a certain point. I don't know. It's just the action's really well realized too.
Yeah.
It's well shot. It's well cut. Yeah, I can't say that about Batman versus Superman. There are times like where I was just like, I visually don't understand what is happening right now. I know things are getting wrecked.
Yeah,
but I'm not really sure why or who or what. Whereas the Alien, there at no point during these action sequences are you confused as to what's happening.
Sure, sure.
And they're shot with a certain, you know, they're inspired by the original, which is just a straight up horror movie.
Yeah.
So a lot of those action sequences have that element of horror in them.
Oh God,
That were like that whole scene where like so many of the Marines at the beginning get lost, where they're in the thing and they're waking up and the cameras are going out one by one.
Scary.
It's so creepy. That movie, when I saw it in the theater, I had to piss like a racehorse. You know, because I had like I got the like giant Coke and I was like, I gotta go to the bathroom so bad. The fact that I, as a teenager, didn't develop kidney stones during that movie is amazing.
Yeah, that is definitely a movie that you don't feel in any way like you can afford to get up from.
If you had that app back then, like it just that there's that app that says now's a good time to go take a leak. It would have just been.
Do
like,
you use that?
You're
have you ever actually used
it? No. because I know.
Yeah.
I know. And, like, honestly, I'm old at this point.
To be honest with you, I feel like I pee so fast that every time I come back, if I'm at the movies with someone, they're like, there's no way you just went pee. And I'm like, oh, I jogged.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Took care of my business, came back. If I clocked myself, I probably would have only taken, like, a minute and a half.
Yeah. Yeah, I will get back before the scene is over.
Yeah, me too.
For sure. But I'm also, you know, middle age, so at this point I'm like, if I gotta take a leak, there's nothing that's gonna happen that you know that's that's gonna blow my mind to that
degree.
Did you see that
Giger documentary?
No, I didn't
because
see
that's
that.
What I was just gonna say, like the interesting test I think, and I don't know what the answer is, because I've not really considered it before now, but the interesting test would sort of be, like, how, what would those movies have been like without his design? Because I'm hard-pressed to think of a more terrifying creature. Hard-pressed.
I think a bigger...
You know what I mean? If they made the alien furry... You know what I'm saying? Elf? Like, I just don't... You know what I'm saying? Even if it was scary in a different way,
yeah.
I just don't know how... I mean, the design of that creature is, to me, like, sort of what makes four even possible, because it is... that the four is the most, like, kind of loving about his art, right? It's
the creature,
we're going to personify the whole sensibility of what you feel when you look at just the alien.
Yeah.
It's sexual, it's dirty, it's mucusy, but it's beautiful,
but it looks
sleek, but it's
That's what I like. Ridley Scott, you got to give him his props and as a director and overseeing all that.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't just Geiger's creature. Like, he had very specific directives mm-hmm. with that creature, because obviously Scott wanted it to blend in with the tech of the ship.
Yeah.
So it had to look like a machine, but it's organic, and that's what's creepy.
Well, but if you watch this documentary, like, that is what he did. Like, that's what Geiger was obsessed with from the beginning.
Right.
Like,
so that's why he got
Scott,
hired.
Yeah. So Scott saw that and was like, "Oh, that's exactly what I need," because Geiger was obsessed with this, like, weird mechanical organic matter.
Hybrid,
this idea of those things kind
like
of coming together. Like a Tetsuo
Iron Man situation.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's interesting to see, like, that was another cool thing about watching all of those movies within a several-day span, is seeing the way the design of the alien changes to kind of morph into whatever the tone of the movie is.
Right.
Because
the third one's like a dog, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so, but, like, weirdly, tonally, it kind of makes sense. You're like, oh, okay, that's what his name wanted. And then the fourth one, it just gets, like, crazy Giger over the top again with this sort of, like, other creature that is born that's also, like, the most horrifying thing you've ever seen on a totally different level.
And that director is the guy who directed that City of Lost Children.
Yeah,
right?
It's Jean Genet, I think.
Yeah, yeah. With Ron Perlman.
Yeah, exactly.
He loves Ron Perlman.
He loves Ron Perlman.
Ron Perlman.
For good reason.
Cool.
And he loves the tiny little guy who's in Amelie, too. who's also in City of Lost Children.
Right.
But the way that the creature changes, and in the first one, it's like, that's sort of the most original version. And then in the second one, what I quickly realized was it's way more aggressive. It is even more mechanical and more, like, militant, kind of. And it's like, it seems fucking pissed. And the first one doesn't seem pissed. But, like, if you've just watched the first one and then you watch the second one, from my perspective, the alien in the second one is just, like, hissy, pissed, like, quivering with rage is the joke that
you
I made
mean
when
the,
I thought.
Are you talking about the queen or just the aliens in general?
Any alien.
I think any of the aliens,
when they get close to your face, and I realize this is a podcast, but I'll do this for your benefit. It seems like they're like,
they're holding it in
right before they're like, and their little mouth comes out and pops it. There's this, like, quiver. Like, oh, you've been waiting to get this close to you, motherfucker.
That's a good observation.
Yeah.
And that's something
it's
Cameron
very, like,
layered onto the monster.
Aggressive and masculine kind of seeming. Weirdly.
I was just talking about monsters with somebody, and I was like, the problem I have with most monsters that turn up in movies now is you've seen them before.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's, like, a giant monster in Batman vs. Superman.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really understand that part. But, like, Michael Shannon's body gets put in some juice.
Okay.
And then Jesse Eisenberg's Lex Luthor bleeds on him, and then he turns.
God, if aliens found our comic books and thought they were real histories, they would be like, these people have a lot of toxic juices. Like, toxic juices are constantly converting humans into something else.
Well, maybe we're on this side. Maybe that's the whole cancer thing.
There you go.
Could be. But anyway, the
and was it a creature where you're like, huh?
Well, it looked like an orc. Okay. It looked like a Lord of the Rings orc.
Yeah.
is, you know, like
what
the creatures.
What do you think of Guillermo del Toro's monsters in general? Because I feel like you can really see him in all of them, but they're always so interesting looking.
Well, and that's the thing. I feel like his monsters, especially in the Hellboy movies, are their own creations.
Yeah.
They're not a derivative of other things. Yeah. Like, you got most movies, like fantasy movies now, it'll be a friggin' cyclops or a dragon or something that I've seen a million times before, and that doesn't scare me.
Yeah. Did you like the Attack the Block monsters?
Yeah, those were great.
Right? Because he was just like, I haven't seen this before.
I haven't seen that before. I'm not sure what I was seeing. It's just shadows with, like, red eyes.
And bright teeth.
Yeah. Which actually reminds me of a thing I did on Halloween. And now I feel guilty.
Uh-oh.
My friend and I, it was instant karma, though, because I ate too many Reese's peanut butter cups and puked that.
How long ago was this?
It was last Halloween. When I was in junior high. But me and my friend were trick-or-treating in his neighborhood, and I liked Reese's peanut butter cups. I was obsessed with them. I don't eat them anymore because of this night.
Oh.
But we had caped, you know, outfits.
Uh-huh.
And at one house, they were giving out pen flashlights. You remember those things?
Yeah.
They look like pens. And do they still make those?
I think so.
Probably.
Yeah.
But they were giving out. So we got a bunch of pen flashlights.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, God damn, I want more. Get more. I don't have enough Reese's peanut butter cups.
Uh-huh.
And my friend Dan was like, we'll just go back to that house in different costumes. I was like, where are we going to get different costumes?
This is an 80s movie.
And he pulled his cape up over his head. And then he put the pen flashlights behind the cave, so it had blinky eyes, and I was like,
very smart.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
So I did it, and then the other guy, we did it, and we all went up with blinky lights, and they had no idea, and they're like, those are the best costumes I've ever seen.
Uh-huh.
Blinky light eyes, brilliant. Here's lots of Reese's peanut butter cups.
If that's the worst thing you've done,
It's not the worst thing I've done.
Let me assure you, do not feel guilty about it.
Just, it made me feel guilty, because, you know, other kids wanted some Reese's peanut butter cups, and
I think they probably did okay.
Yeah, we got a lot.
It was just dishonest. It's not like you went in, you needed a blood transfusion, and you changed your costume, and some other child died because they didn't get one.
But when I saw Attack the Block, I was like, oh, that's that Halloween costume that we came up with at the last minute. Yeah.
Well done.
But when they come up with new monsters, and the alien is such a great example of that, it's scarier.
Yeah.
Because it's not something I've seen before.
Absolutely.
Whereas if it's a like, imagine the movie Alien if it looked like a Cyclops.
That's what I'm saying.
It would be like, oh, it's a stupid Cyclops.
Yeah. I've seen this handled before.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen it in Clash of the Titans. I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I like fresh monsters, and I don't think they do that.
I think Guillermo del Toro is leading the pack on, like, I don't even understand how that man's brain works, and I love it.
Yeah, I like his stuff, too. I mean, even his stuff. You know, the thing about him is I actually like his movies that are bigger,
mm-hmm.
with lots of money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think, a lot of times I see guys who make smaller movies. Zack Snyder, for example, made the remake of Dawn of the Dead,
mm-hmm.
Which, while it was more...
Is that the one that was at the mall?
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, too.
With Bing Rames and, like, Sarah Pauly.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was... They made the zombies fast, but that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, it was the 28 days later after that sort of thing. But it was a really good movie, but less money. He had less money to do that than he does these giant things. Whereas Guillermo's small Spanish-language films kind of drag.
Yeah, they drag. I think that I watch them like especially because I mean in the early days when I was aware of him before Hellboy and stuff, because I was kind of like a foreign movie nerd,
mm-hmm.
it was just exciting to find someone not American who was doing such crazy interesting stuff.
Genre stuff.
So I feel like I put on a different hat, you know, watch those movies than the expectation I have now of, like, the same kind of action movie. So it almost feels like it's just so different that I don't put them in the same class. If I did, I would totally feel the same way. And frankly, I kind of still do. But I remember feeling like something like Kronos was just so out of the box, literally.
I liked, it really was weird. But Kronos was, like, kind of, I don't want to say peeling the layers of an onion, but it was like a, what are those little Russian dolls where there's a big one and then there's a little one and then another little one? I felt like it was like that.
Yeah.
It was like the way it was. But I didn't like the orphan. Wasn't it called The Orphanage? She did one.
Yeah.
Like, that one just didn't work for me. I was like, there's not enough of, it just seems like a more standard ghost story.
Did you see the Crimson Peak or whatever?
Yeah.
Did different.
Yeah, it was okay.
Yeah.
It was
visually,
okay.
It was super fun.
Visually, it was really cool, but...
I mean, like, yeah. I tried to watch The Stain, which I couldn't
watch. Oh, I didn't watch The Stain.
All due respect, but that's a him. It's a show, right? But the dialogue was so bad, and then I kind of was thinking
The Strain.
The Strain. Sorry.
Oh, you did say The Stain.
Sorry, I meant
Yeah, I watched The Strain. He's more of, like, a producer on that. Okay. That show's...
Whatever's happening, the dialogue, I couldn't do. Like, I just was like, I can't do this dialogue.
It's a very silly
show. I'm looking at the dialogue.
Show.
I see people's mouths moving, but what I see in front of that is a script with, like, a white paper and black words on it. Do you
right.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
You just see the words being said, and you're like, can't we do better than these words?
Until the most... I've watched that whole show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I don't know. I like vampires enough, I guess, and it's got they're like zombie vampires.
Mm-hmm.
And I like zombie.
I tried, man. I get it.
It's a dumb show.
Yeah, there's certain things for whatever reason I can get past that I probably shouldn't be able to get past.
Right.
And then there are other things that for whatever reason, if it's the moon I'm in, or maybe it would always be true, I'm just like, I can't do this. The suspension of disbelief is like not kicking in for me on this, you know?
You know, I had that. And I, again, just to reiterate, don't watch The Strain. It's really dumb.
Okay.
I like have a high tolerance for dumb stuff. If it's in the right genre or whatever, then I can hang with it for a while.
Yeah.
But you know, like the lead guy, he's a great actor.
Yeah.
I love him. He should always just be bald.
Yeah.
There's no reason to give up. And they finally, in the most recent season, came up with a reason for him not to have hair. And I was like, well, finally they got to that. That's good. Where was I going with that? I lost my train of thought because I got hung up on his wig.
The suspension of disbelief.
Oh, yeah. So I went to see, speaking of J.J. Abrams,
10 Cloverfield.
You know, and the Stormtroopers and why are they building another Death Star sort
right.
of thing. I saw 10 Cloverfield Lane, which a lot of critics loved and people loved. Including Doug Benson. He was talking about how, and I'm on board. Doug loves musicals. I do not. That's where we separate.
Yeah. But everything else normally.
Yeah. But so he liked this. And I liked it for a while because the performances are genuinely great performances.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's sort of riding on that.
Yeah.
But as soon as the twists and the developments start really kicking in, it was like, what? That doesn't make it, like, literally made no sense. And I was like, how can anyone get... there was one thing...
Tell me. Let's spoil it.
I'm just going to spoil it.
Let's spoil it, because I've seen it, too. And I definitely feel like... I want to hear what you say.
And maybe, you know, maybe I spaced out and missed something. Because that happens. But I was so confused as to why there's, like, a whole... sequence where what's the actress's name?
Mary Elizabeth something.
Yeah, whatever her name is, she's quite good.
Yeah.
But she has to get inside, she's the only person who can fit inside a vent.
Yeah, this is my problem too.
To get into a room to switch the power back on.
And I was like, she weren't there.
Yeah,
how was he gonna
John
do that?
John Goodman, you must have you planned this whole shelter. That's a major design flaw.
Yes. And also, if all of that is true, I guess I don't understand how whatever is supposed to have happened in that room with the previous girl even happened.
Yeah.
Because evidently he couldn't have gotten into that room.
Yeah. Like, so was there like a scene that got cut out where they explain that design
flaw? Was he inside before the shit hit the fan and that's how he was in there? There's a different way to access it and he was in there with this girl and the earring and the scratching for help or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, I didn't understand that.
I was so confused by that. And that took me out. And then every glaring... weird, dumb thing that happened, especially the very last moment of that movie.
Yeah.
Where there's
Tell me some other glaring dumb thing.
A sign that says Baton Rouge this way and Houston this way.
Uh-huh.
Where is that? That's not a place. There isn't a thing where... There's not a crossroads that has those two signs.
You can go one of two ways when you're on Highway 72A. You have
that?
Two choices.
This is... Okay, this is another spoiler alert thing, everybody. But in The Hunger Games, the last one, The Mockingjay Part 2, there's like this whole climactic moment where, you know, Julianne Moore turns out to be kind of a scumbag and she wants to have a new Hunger Games. And she makes a deal with Katniss where, like, the thing that Katniss gets to do is she gets to actually kill Donald Sutherland's character, who she's obsessed with killing because he's responsible for the deaths of her family and everyone she loves, essentially. And she's going to shoot him with an arrow because she's fucking Katniss, and that's what Katniss does. So she's there, and the way it's staged... is there's Donald Sutherland, like in the line of fire, which that makes sense because he's the one who's going to be executed.
Right.
Julianne Moore is slightly higher, directly behind him, which also puts her in the line of fire. Now, I know Katniss is a very good shot, and I know that Julianne Moore is not assuming she's going to be assassinated instead of the execution. But that still seems like a dangerous place to... Nobody should be in that area. There aren't, like, in firing squads, there aren't people hanging out behind the guy. That doesn't make any sense. So, like, that's the climactic moment of the whole fucking series. And I was like, really? That just seems too dumb. And maybe in the book, it was more believable, maybe...
I don't know, because it might just be that in the book, like, you have... You're not burdened by... the same logic as when it's visual, to the point where in the book, the way it's described, it might just sort of like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't, somehow you don't have to, when you see it like executed visually, you might be like, no, hang on.
Wait. Well, that's probably, that might be part of it.
Who knows? Yeah.
But I just said, like, why not have her off to the left and Katniss can just turn?
I know.
It would have been more believable.
Yeah. Did you know? Do you know as an audience member at that point that it's likely that she could shoot Julianne Moore?
I think if
is it supposed to be like a total shock that Katniss shoots Julianne Moore?
I think you at that point. I mean, I knew she would. I was like, they're setting this up that she's going to kill Julianne Moore.
Yeah.
And then
does Donald Sutherland stay alive?
No, because like there's the whole crowd is waiting to watch her, and then she kills Julianne Moore, and they don't know why.
Oh, okay.
They're not in on what she's in on.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they just rush Donald. He's like laughing hysterically because he thinks it's great that she shot and didn't get her revenge that she really wanted, but that was her sacrifice, really. And then the whole crowd just tears him apart, I guess, because it's PG-13, so I didn't get to see it, which is frustrating. When you're watching revenge porn, because you wanted to see his bowels pulled out by a mad crowd, you know, but you just have to assume that
because
that
haven't seen that happen enough. I feel like we've seen plenty of people's bowels.
Yeah, but it's always by zombies, not often by just enraged human beings.
I guess that's true. The other thing I was going to say about 10 Cloverfield Lane is that I didn't feel like there were any twists, which I was fine with, but like. I feel like we're at the point now with movies where if someone says, I don't want to tell you anything about it, then you can just go ahead and assume that everything you think might happen will. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, at no time was I I don't think there are cynical, monsters out there. At no time.
Right.
And at no time did I think he was a good guy. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I was like, I walked into the movie, sat down, and within the first 30 seconds, I was like, the aliens have invaded. Everything that John Goodman is saying is true. He's psychotic. He hurt someone. He's going to hurt her. Like, there was nothing about it that was a surprise. There was, to me, zero. The only thing that was a surprise was the point at which he killed the guy. That was like, I was like, oh, you got me. Like, it's not that I didn't think he was going to die. I just didn't know he was going to die in that moment.
Yeah, that's true. But he was also,
just like, sure, of course all this is happening.
That character, too, the whole time I was like, who is he?
I know.
Why is he here?
Yeah.
Why does he like her? Why? Yeah. What's going on?
Yeah.
You know, he was the most underdeveloped. Refreshing, though, because normally it would have been the female character who was wildly underdeveloped.
Right, right.
But so good for...
I mean, he was meant to be like a very short temporary red herring, I think. You know what I mean? In terms of, like, her figuring out who to trust, I guess?
Yeah, I guess you're right.
But it was pretty short-lived before you're like, oh, I guess he's 100% great.
Yeah. And he was just helpful and nice and not...
Well, I think he was also there because you needed to have the exposition that he did believe that John Goodman was telling the truth. Do you know what I mean?
You
get to have that person who's the history saying, no, 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 he's always been doing this, and I fucking fought to get in so that it would mind fuck her a little more, so that she would be like, well, maybe this is a real thing. Yeah,
but I guess that's the very problem with the character.
Right.
It's like you're hanging out with three characters, one of whom is there just as a plot device.
Right.
So I like that move that confused me.
Yeah,
but and
this is better than Cloverfield.
But I'm done. Well, it didn't give me a headache.
Yeah,
in that way. Yeah, but I'm done. I'm no longer going to anything even tinged of the horror genre that the nation's critics like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done.
Did you like It Follows?
No,
I hated it.
Although
someone wrote me, and I gave her a shout on the podcast because it was the only thing that finally made sense to me about it, because I complained about it and I was like, in general, I was bored. And in general, I understood like the tip of the hat homage, and that was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't like reveling in it. Like, this is deliciously 70s or whatever.
Right.
And then I was so frustrated. I was like, I just can't, like, I don't care. They can move faster. They can go further. And then someone sent me, I mean, it almost sounded like she was angry with me, but I so rarely get angry things that I even will accept it if she was. But she was like, you're missing the whole point. The whole point is how preposterous it is that they don't go further away. It's meant to represent our entire society. And the fact that, da, da, da. And she like broke it down in this more nuanced way where she was like, it's a satire. The movie is a satire of the way we handle shit or something like that.
Right.
And I was like, all right, okay, I can get on board for that. I don't feel like, I guess I'm too dense to have realized that's what it was, but it didn't translate for me the same way that it translated for this girl. But
yeah.
I can get on board for something that's like, you know, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, what does that represent kind of thing.
Sure, I'll have that discussion.
But I wasn't.
Yeah, I'll have that discussion after a movie, for sure. But like while I'm in the movie, it's not going to scare me if I have to find the entertainment value in its metaphors.
Yeah.
That's not... That's not a good movie.
And by the way, going all the way back to War of the Worlds for 1 second, I don't remember Tim Robbins even being in it. I don't really remember anything about that movie except that when it started, it had come out, for me, so close on the heels of 9/11.
Was it that close?
It probably wasn't that close. But for me, emotionally, speaking of, I can't watch things that remind me of other things, or that, you know, if it's fiction, but I can replace it with something real.
Yeah.
I just remember feeling like, I am so not ready to see a black, sooty city with ash raining down and people walking through downtown.
I get it.
Like they're in a daze. I lost my fucking mind. I started sobbing. I was shaking and like rocking. And I was like, I don't think I can stay. And like, I had to like get up and walk around and come back once that had ended.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I'm not ready for this. I'm not ready to see anything that visually represents what our country just went through. And it probably was like 2 years later or something. But I just remember thinking I'm not ready.
I don't know. I have no sense of chronology.
I guess I don't really either.
But
maybe I'll quickly look it up while you're talking.
Yeah, no, I totally see what you're saying. Yeah, I thought those images were super disturbing, but that's also kind of what I liked about it.
Well, that's the thing.
Although
I wonder if I could see it now, do you know, 2005. Yeah, so it was years later.
Yeah. It was not that long.
I wonder
long
if I could see it now and feel nothing, you know?
Maybe not, because that is, I mean, you know, I guess it's a cheap trick, really, but it is terrifying that whole, I love the first act of that movie. I think it's so good.
Yeah. Oh, it was terrifying.
Yeah.
And then it was effective because it was terrifying in what was a, for me, freshly familiar way.
Right. And I like the interplay between the family, and I like that Tom Cruise's dad wants to run. Tom Cruise's, the kid who plays his son, wants to fight. I like that.
Yeah.
All of those family relations and all that stuff I think is cool, and visually it's really cool. I mean, it's just that movie, just nothing falls apart more than that movie.
Yeah,
because it's true, the Tim Robbins thing, which is essentially like the book and the original movie, but it really
is his story. He's like, does it basically 10 Cloverfield reverse, where it's like all these big monsters and then there's a small monster at the end that's a human?
Basically,
okay.
Yeah.
So
I mean, he's a like, you realize he's probably a child molester.
Yeah.
Maybe a psycho killer.
Yeah.
You know? So Tom Cruise has to tell Dakota Fanning to sing a, herself a lullaby while he goes in and kills Tim Robbins with a shovel. And then
we really figured this out.
Yeah, I mean,
Cloverfield Lane is reverse War of the Worlds.
That's a good point. And it's just the third act of War of the Worlds stretched into a 90-minute movie.
Yeah,
maybe not a great choice, but you know the critics love it. But the other thing that drove me nuts about that movie is awesome visual choice on Spielberg's part or whoever wrote David Koepp. Is that how you say his name?
Not sure.
The Jurassic Park writer guy.
Oh, right.
Great visual choice to have the alien invasion, because there's been so many of those, have them come up from the ground as opposed to actually down from outer space. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, which is not from the book, and it's not obviously from the original movie, which is quite simply aliens coming down from outer space, which makes the resolution of how the aliens are defeated make more sense.
Right.
Because in the book, they just get killed by stuff that we just consider to be the common cold or whatever.
Right.
But if an alien, if aliens can traverse the universe and have the foresight to bury spaceships and then just wait until there are enough, I assume, enough people for their farming purposes, because there was some kind of weird farming thing with the people and the blood.
There's always a weird farming element,
which is fine. I'm fine with that. But if they had the foresight to bury ships so when the population got big enough, they could come in and farm us, they probably would have monitored... You know what? There's like some allergens down there that we should all take Claritin before we invade it. That resolution made no sense, which is part of the reason that it disappointed me. I was like, oh, awesome idea. How is this going to... How is it going to play out? And it didn't. They just used the same thing, which didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I just...
No, that's a really good point.
Yeah. But the... Like, up until that... It's true. Up until Tim Robbins... And I don't... think it's Tim Robbins' fault at all.
Yeah.
But up until him, I loved it. It's one of my favorite alien disaster movies.
Two last things. Well, I actually don't know. I don't know how long we've been talking or how long you would like us to be talking.
We're close to an hour.
How long are your podcasts normally, remind me?
Usually around an hour.
Oh, there you go. Doesn't have to be our two last things. But two things that I'm not saying require full-on conversations about either, but talking about old versus new monsters, Jurassic Park original... Uh-huh.
Yeah,
things we've all seen before,
right?
And still was like really great and super scary in the theater for me.
Yeah,
I was really scared in the theater.
I think I was a little too old to be scared.
Yeah.
By that movie.
I by the way, I'm not particularly much younger than you at all. So, but I was as a college age person sitting next to a family who had a kid with them, and I was like concerned for that child's fear level with. Not all the movie, but like the T-Rex with the kids in the Jeep and stuff.
Yeah,
I find it very scary.
It's scary.
It's very effectively scary.
Yeah.
And sure enough, that kid was like not doing so well. You know, it was like a 6-year-old kid who was
That's too young.
Crying. You know
it's
what I mean?
Maybe
now my memory has like superimposed their fear onto mine, but I remember being like, this is scary. I'm scared. Watch out, kid.
There were sequences in the movie that I... found super involving and that I liked. But I mean, I like overall at the time I was like, and I understand it now, I guess more, maybe not, I don't know. But it like had too much of the modern Spielberg sensibility and not enough of the Jaws Spielberg.
Mm, yeah.
Like I felt like it pulled too many punches to be family friendly.
Yeah.
Which I don't think Jaws is family friendly at all. Mm. I know it's rated PG and people get confused and they're like, it's Spielberg.
No, that's a very, very scary movie.
Jaws is terrifying.
Yeah.
But I don't think it pulls any punches.
No.
You know, and I felt like Jurassic Park with the kids, like the kids especially being an element of it, and I don't know, that stuff I was a little bit disappointed
in. Yeah, I hear you. I think it was exactly what I thought it would be, so I think of it still as being a very, like, successful movie artistically for me, but...
Well, I saw it probably 20 times in the theater, I will freely admit.
You did all right.
Because there was a like one of those $2 theaters in Manhattan. It's like underground. It's like an old subway station that they converted into a multiplex. Nobody knew it was there, so they weren't making any money. So it became a bargain place. There were like 16 screens in there.
Oh my God.
So I'd pay to see something, and then I would sneak into some section of Jurassic Park.
Sure, sure.
Because I did love the special effects, and I did love especially that more harrowing sequences with the dinosaurs and the rain and all that
stuff. Yeah, those more relentless ones that were not, as you said, particularly family-friendly were really effective. And then the other thing I was going to say is you can't, like for me, I can't hear any reference to a farming situation in movies, the farming of humans, without feeling like I still feel like The Matrix did like maybe the best job of, for me, the idea of taking a really crazy idea that you kind of want to be like, no, hang on, why is there a Matrix again?
Right.
And like, it's, to me, it's so good, and I'm only speaking of the first movie, that like, I totally buy in. I'm like, yeah, it is a drug. The Matrix is a drug to keep us, like, so they can keep milking us. Like, right. I just thought that was such a great concept.
I thought it was cool, but one of my Steve friends.
But not Rob.
My Steve friend, who's a sci-fi nerd. He pointed out that's an old idea. If you go back in sci-fi literature, apparently.
Makes sense.
It's an old idea. But he's also like, it also, when you think about it, doesn't make any sense that that the machines would need human beings to be batteries, given that we have batteries. So why not just wipe out people and set up some good solar farms, and the Matrix will be just fine.
The answer to that is you have to look a little deeper to realize that AI is sadistic.
Well, that's fair. I mean, that didn't bother me while I was watching The Matrix the way, you know, I couldn't get through Signs because it didn't make sense that aliens who are allergic to water would land on a planet that is entirely blue if you look at it from outer space. The Matrix, I was like, oh, okay, humans are batteries, whatever, that's cool. Get back to that bullet photography
stuff you were
showing me before. I like the flippings, and I like Keanu.
Yeah.
I'm such a Keanu fan.
Are you?
I'm a huge Keanu fan, and I was on the fence about him, you know, when I was a kid, especially when I was in acting school. And as I've grown and watched him be a movie star all these years, I have this wild respect for him. And is he a great actor? I think he'd be the first person to admit that he's not. And he knows his limitations. And sometimes people give him too much to do and too much to say, perhaps. I don't know. Because he's got like certain affects of his just human being. That he sounds like a surfer guy all the time. But never phones it in. You know, if you said, hey, do you want to watch a De Niro movie or a Keanu movie tonight? And I didn't know which ones you were talking about,
I'd take Keanu. Yeah.
Because I'm going to have more fun watching Eli Ross Knock Knock than I am Dirty Grandpa.
Yeah.
I guarantee it.
Yeah.
Because I've seen them both. And Dirty Grandpa's unwatchable. And Eli Ross Knock Knock, while kind of wildly offensive and gross...
I've never even heard of it.
It came out like November of last year. It's Keanu. He's at home. His family's out. He's just chilling. And these two like 20-something hot chicks who say they're flight attendants and they're stuck in the rain and they're like, hey, can we come in? And then they seduce him and then they torture him for being a a cheater. And shame him, and you know, that's the terror of the unsanctioned threesome.
Yes,
you know?
That's right.
Because I'm sure for Eli Roth, there's nothing more terrifying than that. I guess, but he has this monologue that he's saddled with. And I never know with Eli Roth if he's kidding or not. Because his movies, while like disgusting and incredibly offensive, sometimes have this undercurrent of actually being really funny. Like I thought Hostel Part 2, while absolutely disgusting most of the time, was also so disgusting it was kind of funny.
Well, I'm trying to think if I've seen a single Eli Roth movie.
Well, have you seen Cabin Fever?
No.
Well, if you didn't see Cabin Fever, then you probably didn't.
I definitely avoided Hostel, so I know that I didn't see that.
Yeah, Hostel's
and
just...
And he didn't do, like...
He did...
What's-its-face? All the blank movies. Why am I blanking on them? They're, like, the biggest deal in the world.
No. He just has done... Well, last year he had two that nobody saw. The Green Inferno.
Uh-huh.
Which was his rip-off of Cannibal Holocaust, which is a movie that... you should probably just... Let it be.
Yeah.
It's out there. Freaks like me will seek it out and watch it and hate themselves for it. And, you know, you don't need to do it again. But he did it again. And then Knock Knock. But, like, Keanu has this monologue that Eli Roth wrote. And it must have been, like, a page and a half.
Yeah.
In a screenplay format. Because it goes on forever.
Yeah.
And Keanu does it 100%. And he has to say some very silly things.
Uh-huh.
Like, they're torturing him and he's lost it. He's losing it on him. And he's like, you're hypocrites. You showed up and you said, he's like, you fucked me. You fucked me. You sucked my cock. You came to the door and you said you wanted to fuck me. It's like free pizza.
Oh my God.
Like, and he has to say that. It's like free pizza. Which is a hysterical metaphor for
that's right.
For easy sex.
Yeah.
I don't really understand it, but I loved it.
Yeah.
And he was so 100% committed.
Yeah.
And it's a great monologue because his performance is 100% committed and the words are very silly.
Yeah.
So maybe not intentionally funny, but maybe it's hard to tell.
You've definitely, and I, by the way, it's not like I walk around shit talking Keanu Reeves, but I certainly feel like I'm in on the joke that we all have about him, which is like, oh bless, you know. and you know, him committing 100% kind of still fits into the oh bless, but it makes me like him even more. Yeah, it is like, you're right. He just doesn't take a break. Like, he's really trying his very best.
If he takes a job, he's going to do it.
Yeah.
And some of his movies, you know, like The Matrix, but even some ones that you might not think about, like he was in a movie called Street Kings,
mm-hmm.
which is just a B, you know, corrupt cop movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really good movie. It's a really good B corrupt cop movie. You can't ask for more than that if that's what you want to watch.
Did you like John Wick?
Loved John Wick. I was just about to say.
That was a fun movie for him because he just didn't have to say much, so he could really just show you that he's pretty good when he, like, really doesn't.
I feel like he was he. That's why I say I think he knows his limitations.
Yeah,
I think he wants to do like other things, like The Lake House.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you know, but I think that was him saying, "I know what I'm good at.
Yeah,
I'll say very little and kick ass." And it was great.
Yeah,
and you know, and he used his Matrix stunt guys
that.
And you know about his whole thing with the Matrix sequels.
Mm-mm.
He split up his salary with the crew and the special effects people.
Oh,
like,
that's
he
so
gave
cool.
them a ton of his money.
Yeah, that's great.
By saying, this, it's not me.
Right.
That's not what is great about this movie.
Yeah,
it's them. So he
I really like him because that's super cool.
And he's, you know, and also he's been through so much. He's like had a really shitty life behind the scenes.
I know nothing about him personally. Which, by the way, I've always put in the category of respecting him. Because I felt like he's never been like...
He doesn't talk about it, but it's out there.
What happened?
Well, his sister with cancer, and I think something awful happened with his mother, and I think that was like a 1-2 punch, like within short times of each other.
Hmm.
But he's also supposed to be very... I actually saw him once when I first moved to LA, when he was taking a break from movies, I think. This is like before
music?
The Matrix, and he was in Dog Star.
Yeah.
That was the name of the band, Dog Star. And he had a mohawk.
Mm-hmm.
And he came in. I worked in a sugar-free bakery and gift emporium.
Uh-huh.
Which is something I don't think you find outside of Los Angeles,
do
you?
No, I agree.
And I worked in the gift half. And he was getting coffee. And he, like, you know, had put his milk. And, you know, I wouldn't stare at celebrities. Because we got a lot of celebrities. Janine Garofalo, who you interviewed recently on your podcast, came in one time. And I would... Still a huge fan of Janine Garofalo's, but at the time I was, you know, really into Janine Garofalo, and she came in and she just looked fucking pissed and miserable, and I was like, oh, I'm not gonna bother her. So I don't know what's going on with her. But she was probably still drinking back then and was probably just like really hungover. Yeah. But he got his coffee and is just leaning. And you know, and I'd seen him and I wasn't going to stare. I didn't want to stare at him. So I was going about my business. And I just had that feeling that someone was staring at me now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who the fuck is... Yeah. Why do I have that feeling? Yeah, and I look up and Keanu Reeves is just leaning against the, you know, the coffee condiment counter, whatever you call that, with the stirrers and the lids and everything. And he's just staring, staring at me. I was like, oh, that's weird. Keanu Reeves is staring at me. That doesn't make any sense. And then like when I caught him, he just totally did one of those. And I was like, wow, that was a nice moment with me and Keanu.
Yeah.
I don't, I'm not saying it was sexual. I don't know what his deal is there, but it was interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe he was high. No matter what,
it's a great story, and I'm glad that he was staring at you.
Yeah, it was.
You know? That's nothing but good.
All my best celebrity stories are really from my 9 months.
Yeah,
because, like, my manager... This is another guy named Steve. He was a marvelous queen. I loved him to death. And he had to go up to Paul Reiser, speaking of aliens, and ask him to use his indoor voice.
Oh,
because Paul Reiser is very loud. Like, and he immediately, he didn't get mad. He was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
He's like an animated talker, and he gets louder and louder. And if he's surrounded by other people talking, he's louder and louder.
Yeah.
People are like that, especially entertainers. But that was like a great moment.
Oh, that's so funny.
Another great, my favorite moment.
I'm glad he was gracious about it.
Yeah, he was totally
cool. I think I worked with him or I like tested for a show he was producing or something and I really liked him.
Yeah, he's a really nice guy. I mean, obviously if a manager, like a lot of celebrities would not have handled that.
Yeah.
He was actually mortified, which is the proper response.
Right.
If someone has to ask you in a coffee shop to lower your voice, you're like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But the other one, this is not like a celebrity. This is a character actress. And I was, and you know, at that point, I'd been there for a while, so like character actors as well as stars would come in. And it was fun with the character actors because it was like, okay, how do I know?
Oh, sure.
How do
sure.
I know that person?
You yeah.
know?
God, for your brain, that must have been like such a bonus to the workday.
Oh, yeah. And I would get weirdly stuck. Like David Graff, RIP, came in. He was Tackleberry from the Police Academy movies.
Yeah, see, you and I have a different, like, I feel like I know character actors you don't know.
I'm sure you do because we had very different tastes in our formative years. So, I mean, I'm not proud of liking Police Academy movies or anything, but I love Tackleberry. But he came in and I was like, oh, God. And then the guy from Frankenhooker came in. I don't even remember his name. And I was like, oh, my God, it's the guy from Frankenhooker. And everybody, all my coworkers
people,
are like...
by the way, probably love to be recognized because they don't get it as often.
Oh, yeah. He was one of the few... I asked my manager, I was like, that guy's from Frankenhooker. Is it cool if I just go up and tell him I think it's really funny? And my manager's like, yeah, that's okay. Uh-huh. It's just the guy.
You saved it. I loved you saved the permission for Frank and Great.
Yeah. Great. So this lady, this older woman walks in and I recognize her. And I'm like, it is driving me fucking bonkers.
Yeah.
I'm like, God damn it. How do I know her? How do I know her? And I'm like racking my brain. And she's on her way back out because the gift counter was like by the door. So she's on her way back out with her coffee and she stops and she looks at me and she goes, oh my God, hi. You're out of college?
Oh.
And I was like, yeah, I'm out of college. And then I'm going, oh fuck, how do I know her? And she's like, how are your parents? And I was like, great. And I was trying to keep it really general
while I was trying
to figure out how I knew her. I was like, How's your family? How is she's like, they're great. So and so's doing this. And I was like, I don't know so and so. I don't know that person.
Yeah.
And then mid sentence, she stopped and she's like, oh my God, I am so sorry.
No.
I thought you were somebody else. You look just like one of my nephews.
Oh,
and I was like,
no.
Oh. I was just honest with her. I was like,
yeah.
Oh, thank goodness. Because I recognized you, and then I couldn't place it.
Yeah.
And then she was like, it's okay. And I still didn't know who she was when she walked away. And as soon as she walked out the door, it just hit me. She was fucking Mrs. Simon from Simon and Simon, that show from the 80s with Gerald McCraney and Jameson Parker.
Yeah.
She was the mom.
Okay.
It was like a whole thing of like, oh, Jesus.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And I actually yelled Mrs. Simon, like to myself.
Yeah.
And people were like, the fuck is wrong with why did he yell Mrs. Simon? Mrs. Simon!
All of your stories about, from like a certain point back, all feel like they're 80s movies to me. Which is a huge compliment to you.
Well, thanks,
I guess.
Because I
know that you also love 80s movies.
I do.
The Getting More Reese's Peanut Butter Cups feels like a Reese's Peanut Butter Cups commercial.
Yeah.
And you been. Alone at the sugar-free bakery going, Mrs. Simon! And everyone looking at you is like, and we go to commercial break.
That's true. Well, I will take that as a compliment, despite all the 80s movies I watched that when you watch them now, it's like, oh boy. They actually did. Do you ever watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
No, but I know it's great. It's just a thing.
I don't think anyone in Los Angeles watches It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but I do, and I really like it.
I know it's great. I just don't watch a lot of comedies any comedies.
No, yeah, I get it. I get it. I don't watch a lot of them either, but I like It's Always Sunny because it's so. They're just like You're the Worst, but they're, you know, broke and even worse, really.
Yeah.
And Charlie Day cracks me up. But anyway, they did a whole, you know, kind of 80s movie parody where they go skiing and all that, kind of like Hot Tub Time Machine-y, but it wasn't that. And they're all like playing those parts to the hilt, the like snobs so and the slobs and all that. And Charlie Day's caught in between the middle of the two, you know, groups, the nerds and the preps or whatever. And but he doesn't know what the show is. Like, his character keeps going, I don't really understand anything that's happening, so I'm just going to go back to the bar. And they're like, what? No! But they did, like, a whole run with, like, making fun of the Porkies. Because they had the guy from Hot Dog the Movie.
Yeah.
And they had the guy who played Malachi in Children of the Corn. And they had they had another recognizable person.
Did you ever watch Psych? Because that's the other show that does that. My friend James Roday is largely responsible for it. But, like, he really went down that 80s rabbit hole in the best way.
Yeah, because he loves that
stuff. Yeah, so he would be like, I mean, could we get... And, like, he'll just try it. And then they would get him. Like, they would just get every actor that he was like, I don't know. I used to love, like, Cameron from Ferris Bueller. And they'd be like, well, we can get him on the show. Like, he just got all of his heroes.
And he had...
all the Twin Peaks actors.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, so they had the hot dog guy in this thing. And they're making fun of the classic, you know, iconic Porky's thing with the eye and, like, looking and then jamming a dork through the hole. The modern day reaction, the characters, like even the ones who are on board for getting sucked into this kind of 80s universe, like, no, that sounds really illegal. No. And he just, the hot dog guy's just like,
great.
You guys, I can't. He's like having a hard time getting it up. He's like, you guys jump ahead of me in line. And they're all like, nobody's in line. Nobody wants to do this. Maybe you shouldn't do this. Which is, you know, that's Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah.
Like, I loved that movie when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And when I pop it on now, there's still important moments for me.
Yeah.
You know, there's John Goodman saying, you got your asses whipped by a bunch of goddamn nerds.
Yeah.
You know, you got Curtis Armstrong, is that his name? Mm-hmm. Booger saying, you know, what are you looking at, nerd? Oh, I thought it was my mother's old douchebag, but that's in Ohio.
Uh-huh.
Like, great lines like that. But then, like, abhorrent racism throughout, homophobia.
Right.
And the movie is really just about a bunch of nerds committing horrible sex crimes.
Right.
I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be stuck in the 80s, but I am.
No, I think we should be right there. I'm very proud of you.
Thanks.
I'm very proud of you.
Thanks.
I feel like we really got to know you on this podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on your show.
my pleasure. My pleasure. I realized halfway through, like, maybe I should be asking more questions about himself, but I know I can talk movies with you all day long.
Yeah, exactly.
Really a joy for me to be able to do that because I don't do it as much anymore.
Well,
because my podcast is about where people come from, and we'll save that for you to do my podcast this summer.
Oh, I would love to.
It's like I planned the whole thing.
This is just a warm up.
Unconsciously, that's why I wasn't asking.
Awesome. All right. Bye.